House Style, written by Soft October and read by Literarian. Chapter 4. Adam was Mr. Young's son. Adam was 11, rambunctious, imaginative, and did not know which areas of the office were suitable for running in and which were thoroughfares where anyone who happened to be paying more attention to their daydream than their surrounding might be crashed into by a boy pretending he was a pirate. It was in this exact manner that Aziraphale was informed that Mr. Young had brought Adam to work with him. But to his credit, it was a rather good daydream, featuring all manner of things he had tried very hard to stop daydreaming about.
"Sorry, Mr. Fell."
Adam picked up the book that had gone flying out of Aziraphale's hand and handed it back, one eye on his father the whole time. Mr. Young was staring at him very sternly. Or as sternly as Mr. Young could, which was rather reminiscent of Winnie the Pooh before he'd had his morning honey.
That's all right, Adam,"
Aziraphale replied, steadying himself against the nearest desk.
"Why don't we try to be a little more careful? I would have only have been finishing writing a new chapter of my book, and I needed to get into the character of the pirate, because otherwise how would I know if—"
"Adam, don't bother, Mr. Fell," Mr. Young interrupted. "I told you we can talk all about your book on the way home." Adam nodded solemnly, in the manner of all children who have learned that their interests must be dealt with later, and careened off to some other corner of the office to further embody the character of his pirate captain. "To what do we owe the pleasure?" Michael asked Mr. Young, having set down her phone with a faint smile on her lips. "Of your offspring gracing us with his presence, I mean." "Oh, well," Mr. Young said, and tried to escape the rest of the question by burying his head in his work.
"Well, what?"
Michael needled.
"Well, it's a school holiday and Deirdre, you remember Deirdre?"
Everyone at the office remembered Deirdre. Mr. Young's wife was a vibrant, smiling woman whom Mr. Young looked at as if she hung the moon itself. She had a big something or other at work and, well, here we are."
"Ah," Michael replied. "Well, something crashed in the depths of the office, promptly followed by Adam calling, 'It's all right, I'll clean it up.'
Such a darling child," Michael said through a strained smile. Aziraphale made straight for his office, where he expected to huddle for the rest of the day. Once safely ensconced inside, he closed the door, better to safely claim ignorance to all ensuing crashes, shouts, or screams that might happen out on the floor. He lasted all of 30 minutes until,
"Mr. Crowley, I'm terribly sorry."
Aziraphale was out the door in an instant. There was a considerable amount of hot coffee rapidly spilling all over Crowley's desk and was in danger of reaching the fancy laptop in the center before Anathema swooped in with a towel to arrest its progress.
"Mr. Crowley, I'm so sorry," Mr. Young was saying. "He's usually better behaved than this. I'm sure I don't know what's come over him."
This was exactly how Adam was behaved whenever Mr. Young had been obliged to bring the boy into work with him, although who could blame the boy, Aziraphale wondered. There was precious little for a child to do in an editing office.
"That's all right," said Crowley.
He tried to casually wipe his hand on his trousers, but Aziraphale could see where the coffee had gotten him.
"It was just an accident. What were you trying to show me, Adam?"
"Mr. Crowley, at least let me buy you another..." Mr. Young interjected, but Crowley again waved him off.
It's not that important, Crowley shrugged. It happens.
He turned again to Adam, indicating the sheaf of paper in his hands.
What have you got there?
It's a story, Adam replied. And everyone else is busy, but then I heard Michael and Anathema talking about you, and I figured you would have time to look, because Michael told Anathema that you hardly do anything around this office except moon over...
What kind of story?
Crowley interrupted swiftly.
It's about pirates and mysteries and music, Adam exclaimed, delighted to be asked. It's much better than whatever Dad is working on.
Now see here, Adam, Mr. Crowley is very busy and you should...
Oh, I'm sure it is. Why don't you show it to me?
All right.
Adam pulled up a stool and sat beside Crowley, flipping through the pages of a manuscript written in an impressively illegible childish scrawl, explaining the plot, forgetting the middle part and having to double back, looking up at the ceiling as he made impromptu edits to his own work. Aziraphale lightly bit the inside of his mouth and tried not to smile. An hour or so later, he almost bumped into Crowley at the water cooler.
Oh, Aziraphale, I'm glad I ran into you.
Dear, you run into me practically 15 times a day.
Aziraphale almost stumbled over the endearment, but it was worth it to see the blush spread from Crowley's cheeks to the tips of his ears.
Yes, well, my coffee...
He twirled a hand in the direction of where the spill had been.
Anyway, I was going to see about going across the street, doing a...
He ground out the next phrase between his teeth, as if it physically pained him to say.
Bit of a coffee run for the office. Would you, you know, do you want anything?
That would be lovely, yes. You know what I like.
I do.
Crowley smiled fondly at him, and Aziraphale needed to do something about that thrice-damned warmth welling up in his chest before he couldn't control it anymore and just...
Can I come?
Adam suddenly materialized at Crowley's elbow.
It's so boring here.
It is so boring here,
Crowley agreed, quick and bright.
But you'll have to ask your dad first.
Adam rounded on his father, who was immersed entirely in his work and barely able to understand his son's queries, much less respond intelligently to them.
Dad, Dad, can I go with Mr. Crowley? Please, please?
Where are you?
Just across the street. It'll be fun. I'll get the biscuits I know you like and make sure Mr. Feld doesn't eat them.
I wasn't aware that...
Oh, it's okay. They're really good biscuits. I can go get them, right?
I mean, if Mr. Crowley doesn't...
He doesn't. Thanks, Dad.
Adam was out of the office like a shot, and Crowley was obliged to turn his usual saunter into a low trot just to keep up. Mr. Young blinked after them, still wondering what he had just agreed to and just what Adam had said about Mr. Fell and the missing biscuits. He ultimately found the task a bit too taxing and, taking advantage of the interruption in his work, announced to no one in particular that he was going to sort through the office mail that had been piling up throughout the day. The moment Crowley and Adam were out of earshot, and the quiet babble of Adam's voice had faded away into the hall, Anathema turned to face Aziraphale, who was still standing at the water cooler as if there weren't a pile of manuscripts on his desk that wanted tending to. From the twist of the smile on her face, Aziraphale knew he would hate whatever she was about to say next. Tall, handsome, good with kids. Anathema leaned back in her chair and counted on her fingers. Smart, totally into you. Tell me why you haven't actually done anything about this yet. Aziraphale opened and closed his mouth several times before sputtering an answer.
Well, I...
Who's to say they haven't? Michael pushed off her desk and wheeled over in her chair. I've been keeping this under wraps, but I happen to know for a fact that the two of you left together late last Thursday night. What were the two of you up to in this office so late, I wonder?
You know that I... Well, there was all that work Gabriel dropped on us. Who on earth told you that?
I never reveal my sources. And sure, let's say I believe that on your part, but why was he here so late?
I'm sure he had some work.
He hardly has any work, Anathema exclaimed. Half the time when he's sitting at his desk, he's playing games while waiting for the program to compile.
Now that's not fair. We have no idea what goes into building a software like...
I know whose buttons he'd like to be pushing. Oh yeah, I bet he had some hard work to get done.
Some spreadsheets to do after hours.
Aziraphale saw no reason why he shouldn't get in on the game himself. Package for you, sir, said Mr. Young, throwing a small box towards Aziraphale and totally ignorant of the uproarious laughter that followed him back to his own desk.
If we're going to talk about my late-night movements,
Aziraphale began once the three of them had laughed themselves out,
we should probably talk about your mysterious lunch dates down in the mailroom.
Aziraphale was bluffing. He had no idea where Michael had been going for lunch of late, but when Michael made a bit of a huffing sound and Anathema's eyes went wide, he knew he hit the mark. Who told you that? She said, with a deadpan glare that Aziraphale might have been afraid of, if only the taste of his victory were a little less sweet.
You just did, I'm afraid,
Aziraphale replied. Oh my god, he got here! Anathema exclaimed. Who is it?
I wouldn't mind an answer to that myself. Make me feel a bit less like it's only my love life that's on display here.
What love life? Michael muttered, but there was no bitterness in it. It's very new, and I don't... Michael looked away, and Aziraphale saw, not for the first time, the person Michael was underneath the sarcasm, the jokes, the witty comebacks, the network of intelligence agents strewn throughout the company.
Why, Michael, you're worried!
Aziraphale was as endeared as he was delighted.
Are you afraid?
Michael shuddered. Don't say it like that. But as a matter of fact, yes. No one knows what this place can do to a relationship more than me, right? Been doing a bit of digging my own grave these last few years. Going to have to do a bit of a lie in it. Aziraphale could throw in a barb or two, make up for all the teasing he had endured of late. But he and Crowley... They weren't anything, really. And if a voice in his head said something along the lines of, not yet, anyway, well, it could just keep its observations to itself. If Michael had something going on with someone down in the mailroom, of all places, he couldn't imagine what sort of awful dreck the rumour mill would conjure up about such a romance. Just two different types of people, they might hiss, as if the people who handled the mail were somehow lesser because they didn't have a window and a nice view.
That's all right.
Aziraphale patted her hand, where it rested on Anathema's desk.
I won't tell anyone.
Me neither, Anathema agreed. Although I have to admit, it's kind of nice to know you're just as soft and squishy as the rest of us.
Never use those words again. And don't tell Newt either. Boy's got a sweet face, but doesn't know what he should say and what he shouldn't.
Why would I tell Newt? Anathema asked, not meeting either of their eyes. Michael threw up her hands.
I swear, this office is turning into a damn Shakespearean comedy, she blurted. I'm swearing it now. I refuse to get married alongside either of you.
Oh, no, don't say that.
Azira felt consoled.
We both know you'll be lost without my eye for colour.
Ah, yes, a tartan wedding, my girlhood dream.
Tartan is stylish.
And multiple marriages are good luck, Anathema interjected. My family has an old legend that says something along the lines of multiple consummate joy, although my aunt thinks it's really about some kind of medieval swingers club or even a...
This conversation is over!
Michael shoved off Anathema's desk, picked up the phone, and entered into a conversation with no one, just as Crowley and Adam returned from the shop, with drinks for everyone in hand.
What conversation? Crowley asked.
Anathema was giggling too hard to answer him, and Aziraphale took advantage of the confusion to squirrel away to his office before the same was posed to him. The gentle patter of rain on the window lulled Aziraphale into a comfortable daze for the remainder of the day, and this daze was promptly shattered the moment Gabriel arrived in the office at 5:20, just as Aziraphale had bid everyone a good evening and was making his own preparations to leave.
Aziraphale, so good to see you.
Gabriel's voice was smooth, polished, and Aziraphale highly doubted its sincerity, although he reconsidered when he saw the large manila folder tucked under Gabriel's arm. If he was Gabriel, knowing what Gabriel intended to do with that folder, he would be rather pleased to see Aziraphale indeed.
Gabriel, well... Yes, it is rather good. Before you set that down, you should know that...
Yes, yes, it is a rather nice day, isn't it? Listen, Aziraphale, I know we've had our differences. I know that last presentation had a very big miscommunication, and I'm so glad we moved on so quickly from it. So, as a big favour for you, I'm willing to let you try again. I know you won't disappoint us this time.
Gabriel, I actually...
It's nothing much, just a report on the incoming authors. You know more about that than I do anyway. It won't take you long at all.
Well?
This one is important, Aziraphale.
Gabriel stressed the end of his name, made it sound more like fail than fell, although Aziraphale was sure it was simply an accident.
I would do it myself, but she's invited me to go golfing up north this weekend. Golf, Aziraphale. The game of CEOs. The game of politicians.
Ah, yes, I'm sure you're a very accomplished player.
I've never played before. But how hard could it be? It's just concentration and athleticism. Anyone could play, you could play.
He chuckled.
Although you're more the type for the golf cart, eh? Ever look into the link for that treadmill desk I sent you? Sandalphon ordered one last month. He loves it. Says it's a total life changer.
According to Michael, Sandalphon now spent 90% of his workday typing on a laptop on the couch in the break room to avoid having to actually use such a contraption, although he always made sure to sneak back in and hop on the thing when he knew Gabriel would be about. Knowing all that, the comment shouldn't have stung as much as it did, and yet Aziraphale's eyes flitted around the office to find some relief from the intense smile carved into Gabriel's face. But everywhere he looked, he only found more things to be ashamed of. The cup of cocoa Crowley had brought him, the empty package of biscuits he snuck in for an afternoon snack, the particular way his skin bunched around the ring he wore on his finger. He curdled inside, like milk gone bad, and meekly extended his hand for the folder.
"Great!"
Gabriel exclaimed as he traded off his responsibility.
"See you on Monday, then."
Aziraphale made some noise or another of goodbye and closed his eyes as Gabriel was gone in a cloud of his own smug. It was not often Aziraphale felt uncomfortable in his own skin. He enjoyed his dinners and drinks and sweets, but now he was left feeling acutely aware of how the waistband of his pants dug into his belly, how his hips pressed into the sides of his chair, how...
"Aziraphale?"
There was a soft knock at the door.
What was Crowley still doing here? Had he been there the whole time? How much had he heard?
Perhaps if Aziraphale kept his eyes closed, he wouldn't have to open them to see pity in Crowley's eyes, wouldn't have to endure the million and one platitudes, the sympathy. He didn't think it was possible to be more embarrassed than he already was, and yet here was Crowley in his slim-cut suits and his well-coiffed hair and his handsome... Well, that was certainly enough of that. And he had heard Gabriel talking about...
"Oh, I suppose you heard all that, then?"
"That puffed-up, pompous, neon-toothed, holier-than-thou, snobbish, self-satisfied asshole!"
He opened his eyes, and Crowley was standing in the middle of his office, agitated and ranting.
"I mean, who on earth does that bastard think he is? Talking to you like... I have half a mind to hack into his email, send that awful book of his to the whole company this time, his signature all over it, but that's too good for him, I should..."
"What?"
"You're right, it'll be a company-wide email where he forwards his teeth-whitening appointment or... or hair plugs, that'll cut..."
"Crowley, you don't..."
"Awful, that's what he is. I mean, how dare he?"
"Crowley!"
"Yes, oh, no, I'm sorry. Here I am ranting, and I'm sure you have a better idea, clever mind like yours."
"We don't... there doesn't have to be any sort of revenge at all. Not for that, at least."
"Aziraphale?"
"Well..."
Aziraphale looked down at his twiddling thumbs, twisted his ring around one chubby finger.
"I mean, he's a bit right, isn't he?"
Crowley's mouth dropped open, like Aziraphale had uttered a particularly colourful string of curses.
"Are you... you're not being... no, he's not right. You're not... you're fine just as you are."
Aziraphale's heart lodged somewhere in his throat, and he coughed to try and loosen it.
That's very kind of you."
"It's not. It's the truth. Now, before you decide to tell me I'm wrong again, and I'm not... I suggest we both get the hell out of this office and away from the stupefying smog of corporate culture, yeah?"
Aziraphale couldn't find a single protest to that argument, so he allowed his things,
including the folder to be bundled into his briefcase, his coat to be presented to him, his lack of an umbrella gently mocked.
"You, Michael, and everyone else, I swear it's like none of you ever heard of a weather report."
And his arm to be taken and steered down the hall to the elevator, Crowley prattling on practically all the way about little nothings, his voice a welcome distraction from the self-deprecating nature of Aziraphale's thoughts.
"Your plants are looking much better,"
Crowley said once the elevator doors had closed and they were on their way down to the lobby.
"Not drowning them anymore, I take it?"
"You told me not to," Aziraphale said. "You seemed like you knew what you were doing."
Crowley made as if he was going to say something, but then a flood of chatty passengers eager to get home for the weekend got on at the next floor, and he was silent the rest of the way. In the lobby, Crowley made for the front doors along with him, instead of towards the car park in the back.
"No fancy car today?"
Aziraphale asked.
"Unlike the rest of your office, I actually check the weather in the morning. That car doesn't have a spot on it. I'm not going to drive it through the rain just to prove I can."
"If you don't want to drive your car through the rain, I'm not sure London is the best place. Hey, you two."
Every once in a while, an eccentric millionaire who owns a stake in some car manufacturer decides that it would be great fun to make an affordable car for university students and their younger siblings who will invariably inherit the vehicle. The car will be practical, reliable, a bit wobbly, and go down in history as one of the best-selling and most bizarre cars ever made. Just such a vehicle, in electric blue no less, pulled up in front of the building. Perhaps predictably, when the driver's side window was rolled down, the pair found that it was driven by none other than Newt, helpless thrall of Anathema, and he of the precarious stacks of payroll documents, beckoning them over.
"I've got plenty of space if you need a lift home. Bit of lousy weather out today."
Newt's car didn't look like it could support its own driver, let alone two passengers, but the rain was coming down in a manner which suggested that the weather was annoyed with him specifically, so Aziraphale wasn't one to argue. He slid into the back seat, assuming that Crowley would take the passenger, and was met with a veritable flood of emotions when instead Crowley crowded next to him in the back.
"All right then," Newt called.
Aziraphale replied, in a voice much higher than usual, that everything was fine, thanked him, and gave him the address to his cramped and snug Soho apartment. Newt began to put the car in gear.
"Hang on," said Crowley.
"Whatever for?"
Aziraphale asked, his curiosity overcoming the daze that was having Crowley so close.
"For that,"
Crowley replied, pointing to the front door of the building, where Anathema had just emerged and was now staring up at the sky as if in personal affront.
"Oh!" Newt exclaimed. "I didn't... She probably won't need... We shouldn't just assume..."
"Oi!"
Crowley called to Anathema, heedless of Newt's protests.
"Newt here's giving us all a ride home."
A grateful smile broke out on her face, and she rushed to the passenger side door. The onslaught of wind and rain invaded the car for only a moment before she closed the door, reached across the space, and planted a kiss on Newt's cheek. Newt promptly yanked the wheel into traffic and earned more than a few angry honks for his trouble.
You're a lifesaver, Anathema told him, trying to wring out her hair with her hands. Aziraphale reached into his pocket, practically leaning over Crowley in the process, to hand her a handkerchief.
Thanks. I'm furious with my divinations. They promised nothing but clear scars all day. I didn't even bring an umbrella. But lucky for me that you came along.
This was directed at Newt, who was gripping the steering wheel like it owed him money and staring out at the road with the focus and determination of a Queen's Guard beset by an especially irritating American tourist. Anathema, oblivious to Newt's distress, continued, wondering where she had gone wrong in her predictions, considered calling her mother to see if her tools had been equally muddled of late, and wondering if she shouldn't just turn on the telly to get the weather tomorrow morning. With Anathema taking a commanding lead of the conversation in the front, Aziraphale and Crowley were free to pursue one of their own, and they promptly took advantage of the time by saying absolutely nothing and staring out of opposite windows at the grey sky and grey buildings. It wasn't that he didn't want to talk. It was just, well, Aziraphale was very aware of each place they touched in the cramped space, the warm place where their knees knocked together every time the car hit a bump in the road, the way the curve of his hip kept invading Crowley's space, the way Crowley didn't seem to mind at all, but just fiddling with his hands, as if he wasn't sure where to put them. Aziraphale was so wound up about the whole thing that he hardly even noticed where they were going, and when Newt said, "Isn't this it?" he was startled to find they had arrived outside his own apartment.
"Thank you for the ride," he said,
as he got out and made for the awning, and he should say more, shouldn't he? He should have at least said goodbye to Crowley and Anathema, although the latter wouldn't have noticed either way, and the former was getting out with him. "Thanks," Crowley said, and knocked on the top of the car twice, bidding Newt to drive off. He didn't join Aziraphale under the awning, though. He stood out there in the pouring rain, 6 feet apart, and Aziraphale must have been looking at him in the strangest way, because Crowley's face fell, and he raised his hands as if in defiance.
"I just wanted to give them time, you know? To themselves, work their own stuff out. I didn't mean for... I mean, I'll just wait here and call a cab and..."
He drifted off. Aziraphale was looking at the way the rain ran in rivulets down Crowley's face, the way his perfectly coiffed hair had been flattened by the downpour, the strangely vulnerable turn of his lip, and he knew without another doubt in his head that if he invited Crowley into his flat, he would kiss him before the night was over, and damn the consequences and the fear and everything else. If he had thought about it for just another moment, if he had just a bit of patience, he would have been able to reason up why that was a bad idea, would have been able to leave Crowley down on the pavement while he went up to his cozy apartment alone. But Aziraphale was tired of patience and waiting for anything, or at least that was the only excuse he could think of later when he tried to work out how his heart managed to outrace his brain and reach his voice first.
"Nonsense," he found himself saying. "Wouldn't you rather come up?"